If you were talking about a critical problem that has been facing the world, you'd probably say that so-and-so has met his Waterloo. Waterloo, of course, is the time that we have Napoleon was making successful campaigns wherever he went, until he came to a little town in Brussels, Belgium, near Brussels, Belgium. And there he met Wellington and also Blücher, and he was defeated. And that changed everything. Of course, in the Bible, if you're a believer in the Bible, you would talk about someday Satan is going to meet his Armageddon. And Armageddon is actually in the Scriptures. If you want to turn with me to the book of Revelation, chapter 16, this is what I want to talk about. What basically is Armageddon? What does it mean? Well, you'll find that here in this 16th chapter of Revelation, it talks about the sixth angel that sounds. So we have then a key to the end of the age. Things are going to change after this happens. Chapter 16 and verse 12, it reads, "And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great Euphrates." The Euphrates River, as you know, is over there in Iraq. And here we have the name of the river that's going to be dried up. "The water was dried up, and the way of the kings of the east might be prepared." I think that's rather interesting. Hold your thumb here and go over to the ninth chapter of Revelation. Kind of put this together. In the ninth chapter, we read about this great number that is coming from the east. Chapter 9, and we'll have to begin there with verse 14. It says, "The sixth angel which had the trumpet loosed the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates." So here we have a combination of talking about the Euphrates River over there in Iraq. Tigris, Euphrates River, Babylon, ancient Babylon is what it is. Verse 15 says, "The four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour, a day, and a month, and a year, to slay the third part of men." One third of our world's population, of the 6 billion people, are going to be killed. That's 2 billion people are going to be killed. "The number of the army of the horsemen," in verse 16, "was 200,000, 200 million men." Sounds like only a great nation could muster that big an army. A big nation like China, perhaps, or maybe those that go with China. But notice, it says there in verse 16, there's 200,000, 200 million, "and I heard the number of them. And thus, when I saw the horses in vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire, of jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions." And we read there that fire and smoke and brimstone came out of them. Probably rocketry and so on that John wrote about. He didn't know what this all represented, but he said it was like smoke and brimstone and fire. And you'll notice there that it says, "And by these three was a third part of men killed, by the fire, by the smoke, and by the brimstone. For the fire is in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails are like unto serpents, and their heads, and with them they do hurt." And then he goes on to talk about the rest of the world is continuing in demon worship in verse 20. "The rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship demons and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone, and of wood which neither can see nor hear nor walk, neither repented they of their murders, nor their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts." So in spite of the two billion people that are going to be killed, the world continues with its regular worship. No change at all. But notice there in verse 16, it says he gathered them together. We're back now in the verse, in chapter 16, verse 16. It says he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. Actually, the Armageddon is a place, it's rather interesting, where Gideon slew 300 and his 300 men defeated the Midianites. It was also in this place called Armageddon that King Saul was defeated by the Philistines. And it actually talks about a Har, means mountain or hill, Megiddo. And it was the gateway to the hill country. For some reason, this is where the gathering of the people is going to be, and this is where Yahweh pours out his wrath upon the people. And it's the Armageddon, their Waterloo. It's where the army will be decimated. So we find that this is one of the places that Yahweh talks about what he is going to do. And we have the indication here that it all takes place at Armageddon. And then, of course, in chapter 16 and verse 17, it continues. We're not going to go there. But I want you now to turn over to the book of Zechariah, because we find the Old Testament talks about these selfsame things, about the things that are going to take place, so that those that are not living in the time of the New Testament, they still have the warning available to them, or did have it available to them. And in Zephaniah, excuse me, in the book of Zephaniah, chapter 3, I want you to notice there in verse 8, this is Yahweh talking to his people. He says, "Therefore, you wait upon me, says Yahweh, until the day when I rise up to the prey." And in verse 8 of chapter 3 of Zephaniah, he says, "For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy." Here we have Yahweh saying the same thing as he says over in the book of Revelation, but in Revelation he tells us where it's going to be, by the river Euphrates and by the Har Megiddo, the Mount Megiddo. In verse 9, we always think of this one because we know that in verse 9 we are told that the sacred name will be restored when Yahweh's kingdom is set up on this earth. Notice verse 9, "For then will I turn the people to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of Yahweh and serve him with one consent." So there we find he's going to restore his covenant people, the people that he has been working with. And this is what is interesting, that Yahweh, in spite of all the things that are going on, is still working with a group of people, striving to teach them the ways that he has set aside for us to follow. Let's go back to the book of Isaiah in chapter 42. So not only was Zechariah and Zephaniah and some of the others privy to what Yahweh is doing, but notice here in the book of Isaiah and in chapter 42, we find beginning there in verse 13, it says, "And Yahweh shall go forth as a mighty man. He will stir up jealousy like a man of war. He will cry." Boy, he's going to roar. "He shall prevail against his enemies." They have met their Armageddon. "I have a long time hidden my peace. I have been still and refrained myself," Yahweh says. "Now will I cry like a travailing woman. I will destroy and devour at once." Excuse me. "I will make waste mountains and hills and dry up their herbs, and I will make the rivers islands. I will dry up the pools, and I will bring the blind by the way that they know not. I will lead them in paths that they have not known. I will make darkness light before them and crooked things straight. These things will I do unto them and not forsake them." So he's telling us that even though we know things are going to be bleak and dark at the end of the age, Yahweh will not forget His people. He still is working with people that He's calling out. And we find there in verse 17, He said, "They shall be turned back, they shall be greatly ashamed, that trust in graven images, that say to the molten images, 'You are our deities.'" Well, He goes on to tell about those that have been worshiping deities are going to find out that they do them no good, that it is Yahweh that has salvation. Let's go to the 61st chapter of Isaiah. In chapter 61, we often think about this because Joshua, the Savior, quoted from this very verse in this very chapter. He said, "The Spirit of Yahweh, Elohim, is upon me, because Yahweh has anointed me to preach the good tidings unto the meek. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted." Thank you. Excuse me a minute. "He has proclaimed liberty to the captives and the opening of the prison to them that are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of Yahweh." You go back to the New Testament and you'll find that in Luke 4, this is exactly where Yahshua stopped, because the day of vengeance He didn't bring about. That is coming ahead. That is the day of Armageddon. So in Isaiah 61, we find here, it says, "The day of vengeance of our Elohim, to comfort them that mourn, to appoint to them that mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, and the planting of Yahweh, that He might be glorified." So we find here that Yahweh is still working with His people, and that He is going to continue to do that. And notice in verse 4 it says, "And they shall build the old waste places, they shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities and the desolations of many generations." Then He goes on and tells what is going to happen. That these, for example, "The strangers that stand and feed your flocks, and the sons of aliens that shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers." But what is Yahweh doing with the people He's working with now? In verse 6 He says, "You shall be named the priests of Yahweh." We are supposed to know Yahweh's word well enough to teach others, to teach them the truth of His word so they understand it. These people that look around and try to find whatever verses they can pick out of the New Testament that says they don't have to obey or keep any law do not understand in the Old Testament that was never an issue. In fact, I like the way some of the Jewish people talk about Yahweh's law. They talk about the book of instruction. Not the book of law, but the book of instruction. How to be like Yahweh wants us to be. How to be like Yahshua. And here we find, if you're going to be a priest, you better know what you're going to be a priest over. Excuse me. And Yahweh talks about this all the way through, both the Old Testament and the New Testament. Why did Yahshua come here? One of the things, he's only here 3.5 years. That wasn't a very long time. We've been on this earth now, as far as we know, some 6,000 years. And for 3.5 years, Yahshua preached to the people, and His words were written down, and we still have them. But we had the Old Testament all the while. And yet Yahshua came. And what He did, He gave us an indication of what it's going to be like in the kingdom. He opened the eyes of the blind. He unstopped the mouths of the dumb. He healed the people that were sick. He raised the dead. All these things are going to be in the kingdom. And if we're to be a priest and a king in the kingdom, we'll also have power, much like Yahshua has, to do these selfsame things in the kingdom. We also know that some of the difficulties that we are going to be having in the days to come. But I want to go over to the, let's take a Psalm 72, if you will. In Psalm 72, for example, we get an idea of what Yahshua is going to be doing. It's going to be a worldwide kingdom that he's ruling over. And he will be in charge. Under him will be David. Under him will be others that will qualify to be in that kingdom and be given certain rewards. But in chapter 70, or verse 70, in Psalm 72, move on down to verse 5. They shall fear thee, talking about Yahweh, who's judging of the poor people, and he'll save the children, we read in verse 4. And they shall fear thee as long as the sun and the moon endure throughout all generations. He shall come down like rain upon the mown grass and showers that water the earth. In his days shall the righteous flourish and the abundance of peace so long as the moon endureth. And it says in verse 8, he will have dominion from sea to sea, from the river of the ends of the earth. They that dwell in the wilderness shall bow before him, and his enemies shall lick the dust. And this is all going to take place after the battle of Armageddon. The kings of Tarshish and of the Isles shall bring presents. The kings of Sheba and Seba shall offer gifts. Yea, all the kings shall fall down before him. All nations shall worship him. And so he goes and tells us how he's going to rule the entire earth. And he will have others under him. I want you to turn with me to the book of Exodus, chapter 19. In the book of Exodus, we have this promise that Yahweh has given to ancient Israel. And in the 19th chapter, we get an indication of what he is expecting, not only of ancient Israel, but also of us. So in the 19th chapter, notice in verse 1 it says, in the third month the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land. And they left Egypt, and that same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. And they were departed from Rephidim, and they were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel pitched before the mount. Sometimes people ask, what is the difference between Mount Horeb and Mount Sinai? What is the difference? Both of them are where Yahweh says he gave the law. Well, basically, it's at Mount Sinai where Yahweh thundered the law from Mount Sinai. But in the 24th chapter of Exodus, you find there that this was at Horeb when the Israelites backed away and said, we don't want to hear any more of this. He's too loud. He's too noisy. He scares me. Moses, you talk to us. You tell us what he said. We can't stand this anymore. We have to go. And so they backed away. And it was at Mount Horeb where he gave the law to the people. And they said, whatever Yahweh says, we'll do. We'll be obedient. It's the same thing. But people think there's a different law given at Horeb as was given at Sinai. Well, I got off track here. Where am I? Oh, here. Chapter 19, verse 3. And Moses went up unto Elohim, Yahweh, and called unto him out of the mountain, saying, thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. See, all Israel was to be a kingdom of priests. They were all to teach Yahweh's law and his way of life. These are the words which you shall speak unto the children of Israel. So this is part of the things that Moses had to write down and make available in what was known as the Book of the Law, which was put alongside the Ark. The Ten Commandments were put inside the Ark, but the Book of the Law was put on the pocket on the outside of the Ark. And you find that over in the 24th chapter of Exodus. In fact, you want to turn over there, we'll just take a quick look at it, kind of an aside here. But in the 24th chapter, move on down to verse 3. Moses came and told the people all the words that Yahweh spoke and all the judgments. And the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which Yahweh has spoke, we'll do it. No problem. We'll do everything he said. So Moses wrote all the words of Yahweh and rose up early in the morning and built an altar in the hill according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent the young men of the children of Israel, which offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen unto Yahweh. Verse 5 is kind of an interesting verse because it probably was the firstborn that had been spared when the destroying angel came through. And that's why the firstborn, or called the young men here, were given a special task. But notice it says that Moses took half the blood, put it in basins, half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And without the shedding of blood, there's no remission, as we know. And in Hebrews 9:22. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, "All that Yahweh had said we will do, and we will be obedient. If he says anything else, we'll do that too." The only trouble is that Yahweh's people didn't have Yahweh's Spirit at that time. They had Moses, now they had the book of the law written down, but they did not have the Spirit to obey what Yahweh wanted them to do. But nevertheless, they offered to be obedient. But notice in verse 8 that Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and behold, the blood of the covenant, he said, which Yahweh hath made with you concerning these words. So Moses wrote all these things down, and this is the promise that was made to Israel. And these are the things, the blessings and the curses. If people kept the law, they would be blessed. If they didn't, why, they would be cursed. So this is really what we find the book of the law is what Yahweh told Moses, and it was written down for their learning. I want you to go over now to the book of Isaiah again. I want to tie this together. Isaiah chapter 61, where we just were. And you find here that in verse 61, so chapter 61 and verse 6, it says, "But you shall be named priests of Yahweh. Men shall call you the ministers of our Elohim. You shall eat the riches of the Gentiles, and their glory you shall boast yourselves." So the promise to be a priest was there. Let's go back over to the book of 1 Peter, chapter 2. Here in 1 Peter chapter 2, and put in there at verse 9, you'll know again that this self-same thing is told to the people in the New Testament. Notice verse 9. Anyone that Peter wrote to and those that are reading it today, this is addressed to you and me. It says in verse 9, "You are a chosen generation." You are chosen from this generation to represent Yahweh. He says, "You are a royal priesthood, and as a group you will become a holy nation, a peculiar people." The word peculiar isn't a good word. It should be a people that is worthy, a people that's valuable, a people that has a great future. "You are a valuable people, that you should show forth the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." That was the one thing that Yahweh and Yahshua often said. He was the light of the world. And we too are to be the light. And we are called out of darkness into the light of his way of life. Verse 10 says, "In times past we were not a people, but now we are the people of Yahweh, which have not obtained mercy, but now we have obtained mercy." If you wonder who these people are, let's go stay with this chapter, but let's take a look at the beginning part, which we left out. Verse 1 says in chapter 2 of 1 Peter, "Wherefore, laying aside all malice," that is all hatred, all guile, all crookedness, all hypocrisies, all envies, all evil speakings, just like newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word, that's how we should desire Yahweh's word, that we might grow up. "If you have tasted that Yahweh is gracious, to whom coming as living stones, disallowed of men, but chosen of Yahweh and precious. So here we find that Yahshua was a living stone. But notice in verse 5, he says here, you also as living stones are built up a spiritual house. So now he's talking to you and me. He's talking to people who make up the assembly, the ecclesia, the called out ones. He says, you are living stones. You're built up a spiritual house. You ever thought about that? That we're not bricks. We're not concrete blocks. We're not all the same shape. We're not all the same size. We're not all the same density. Not all the same color. But the chipping and the molding of the stones is going on to get us to fit into this holy temple that Yahweh is building, a spiritual temple that we are to fit into. And again, it's a spiritual house that we're looking at, not a physical house, a spiritual house where our hearts are united in understanding and praise for Yahweh and our goal to serve Him and to be a part of the coming kingdom. And we are a part of the holy priesthood, that we should be living a life worthy of being a priest. And we offer up not animal sacrifices, but spiritual sacrifices, a broken and contrite heart. That's what Yahweh is looking for, which is acceptable by Yahshua's Messiah's death and resurrection. And here in verse 6, he talks about this spiritual temple. And he says, wherefore also it is contained in the scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect and precious, and he that believeth on him shall not be confounded. Unto you therefore which believe he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner. It's the cornerstone, the building block upon which our spiritual house is built. But to them it's a stone of stumbling, a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word, being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed. So here we have the promise that's made to us. We know that in the Old Testament there were the same promises made in Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. In fact, all of the Old Testament, as you search it, you will find they give us a promise of what Yahshua is going to do. We live on this side of Calvary. We live on this side where we know a little bit more than those that were brought up under the Old Testament. Because the spiritual understanding was not given back in those days. But since Pentecost, we find that the Spirit, Yahweh's Spirit, is made available to us. I want to close this. Surprise you, close early. In Revelation chapter 16, I want you to come back there again. Chapter 16, beginning in verse 14, it talks about the spirits of demons which we want to shed and shun, working miracles which go forth unto the kings of the earth and the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of El Shaddai. This is the great battle. And we find here that it's verse 15, behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watches and keeps the garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon. I pray we'll be ready for Armageddon whenever that comes, that we'll be considered one of Yahweh's people, we'll be studying, keeping His word, being obedient to whatever He wants us to do, striving to walk in the narrow way in the footsteps of Yahshua the Messiah. And that is my prayer for all of us today. May Yahweh be with us.